This is Megan Bucknam. I'm here with Tara Cobbins on July 1st at the Promise Neighborhood House in Hudson, New York. We are conducting an oral history for the Oral History Summer Schools Archive Project about Hudson, New York. Tara, could you introduce yourself?
My name is Tara Cobbins. I'm 43 and I was born and raised in the small community called Hudson.
Beautiful.
I'm a mother of six. I am a grandmother. And that's really kind of, you know, in my community, I've overcome many obstacles. Anybody from my community knows that prior to this interview, I've spent some time incarcerated in a woman's facility. I've spent like 5 years and 3 months of my life being incarcerated. But I love my community, and I've come back after all those years, and I kind of like what's going on in the community. I just don't like a lot of the things as far as the expensive housing and as far as the children really not having consistency. The only consistency they have really is Promise Neighborhood, thanks to Joni Hunt and the young lady she employed and the gentleman she employs. But the community has prospered, but at the same time, as far as stores and things like that, the community has prospered as far as financially, but if we break it down, it hasn't really helped the minorities in this community. So that's really Tara. Now it's every day I try to stay positive, and you know, Promise Neighborhood, they have SBK, they have a lot of different things in the community that you can, if you choose to be positive in this community now, you can do so. But you know, in life is always what you make it. So like I said, I love my community. It's just that I feel as though there are more things that should be being done for the children in this community. You know, we don't want statistics as far as, you know, children being incarcerated. You have, as I said, I've just finished being incarcerated. I'm currently on parole, but you know, I've seen the community. I've seen how things can turn out. And you know, if my story or what I've been through can just help one child or one kid or somebody in this community, I'm grateful for it. You know what I mean? So with that being said, you know, that's where I'm at in life. So a lot of we have Cedric Fulton. He's good in the community. We have Quentin Cross. We have a few people, not quite a few people in this community that are really trying to do. We have Alexis Keith. We have a lot of people in this community trying to pick our community up, which is a good thing, you know, because like I said, it has prospered as far as new stores and, you know, as far as money coming in from Manhattan and things of that nature. But at the same time, if you look at these corner stores, and I'm 43 and I grew up here, you know, nothing's the same. We used to have a community store called IGA on Columbia Street. That's what back in the days we used to call the hood store. You know, everybody knew everybody, but things have changed a lot because I was raised to believe that it takes a village to raise a child. And that's not how it is these days, you know, and it's sad because everybody doesn't know everybody anymore. You know what I mean? And that's very important in communities. It's very important as far as your children, when you have children in the community. And I'm a grandmother also. You know, it's very important for children to feel as though that they can go to a person that they might not know, but they're in this community, feel safe if something's going on with them. So, you know, like I said, the community has changed in a positive way, but there's still also a little negative rock in our community. So, yeah.
Thank you. And I'm curious about who you include in the word community. Who's a part of your community?
This community is everyone in this community. Just because you didn't grow up here doesn't mean you're not a part of the community. If you moved in this community, you're a part of the community. The children are a community. The adults are a community. The stores are a part of the community. You know, the police department is a part of the community. Though I don't agree upon a lot of things that they do, this is all part of our community. And, you know, we need to make changes, but for the better. You know, and as far as, like I said, like Hudson Police Department, I can probably tell you every officer there, but a lot has changed, and I don't feel personally per se that the police department involves themselves enough in our community as far as the young children are concerned. You know, yeah, you come down and make arrests, but what do you do besides that to encourage children of the community? You can have scare straight programs, you know, out to the jail. There are a lot of things that can be done in the community as far as Hudson Police Department. Now, as far as the sheriff department, I can say the sheriff department, they do have a program for children with incarcerated parents. It's called the Enhanced Program. Joni Hunt is a part of that program also. They bring the children out to see the parents, supposed to be on the opposite sides. They're on the same side. I participated recently in that program because I just entered back in my community on May 2nd of this year. So I played a part in that. And it's very important, no matter what you go through in life, no matter what poor choices we make as adults, even as teenagers, it's very important that because I've made a poor decision or a poor choice, that doesn't make me any different than anybody else. You know what I mean? It doesn't mean that I'm lesser than. It just means that I made poor choices. And you can move on from those poor choices. And that's what I choose to do. But like I said, you know, our community involves a lot of different things. And, you know, there I see now, I promise, you know, everybody comes together to do meetings and stuff. And these meetings are based on what's going on in the community. And with that being said, that, you know, let's go back to the housing here. You know, you have, per se, I just came home May 2nd. I don't have an income right now. You have, you know, jobs right here on Warren Street. This is our main strip, Warren Street. You know, we had a meeting and it was said that there are jobs on Warren Street in these different restaurants. But at the same time, as a person of this community, though they're in the community, I feel as though they're not going to hire me. I'm a felon. You know what I mean? So though they say there are opportunities in this community, as a felon, it works, you know, different strokes for different folks. What works for everybody else might not work for me. You know what I mean? Nobody wants to give a job to what they call, quote unquote, I'm a violent felon, a category one. So when you look at my history, all you see is the violent part of me. You don't see the terror, the inner terror. You don't see the happy-go-lucky terror. You don't see the terror that's been to college. You don't see these things. All you see is a felon, which isn't a good thing, and which is you're judging me by a piece of paper. You're not judging me by meeting me. So I say that to say that with our community, and even with the Hudson Police Department, I don't have a good name there. But my thing is this, that give me a chance until you see something different. Until you see me going left when I should be going right, give me a chance. And like I said, as far as this community and housing and things of that nature, I bump into constant brick walls because of being a felon. No one wants to rent to a felon. No one really wants to give a felon, you know, a job on these because... And I don't knock people from Manhattan. I don't knock anybody that's doing positive and being prosperous. I don't. But at the same time, don't knock me for trying. I'm not asking for a handout. I'm asking for a chance. You know what I mean? And it's really hard. I have, you know, a lot of people working with me now to try to help, you know, people to see the positive. Like Ruth, she works with Joni, you know, like Susan with this interview. So, you know, I've met nice people that don't judge me when I say that I've been incarcerated for the amount of time I've been incarcerated, that I made poor choices. So I'm grateful. I'm very grateful for that. But my thing still is the community. You know, this community has changed so much from when I used to live in Bliss Towers. You know, I've my whole life, you know, I'm 43, but besides the 5 years and 3 months I've been incarcerated. I lived in Albany for maybe 3 years. But besides that, this is my home. This is, anytime you ask, where I'm from Hudson. And I'm very proud of Hudson as far as the changes. I just see that it could be a lot better than what it is. You know, so, yeah.
How do you describe Hudson to someone who's never been here?
Hudson... It's Hudson. Hudson, you will now meet different ethnics. You will meet different people. You will meet all walks of life in Hudson now. You know what I mean? And, you know, as far as Hudson, I mean, we have a lot of things going on in Hudson now. We have gay pride, which is, I'm all for it. You know what I mean? I have gay family members. You just, before growing up in Hudson, the changes that have taken place wasn't there then. Like, you didn't have open gay couples in Hudson when I was coming up. You didn't have straight up Warren Street, all these stores and, you know, these antique stores, these expensive stores. You didn't have all these things when I was growing up. You know what I mean? What you had from when I was growing up to now, when I grew up, you had corner stores where everybody knew everybody. You had the whole community that knew everybody. You know, it was, if I was out late, I was supposed to be here by 9 o'clock. If somebody seen me, you best believe they, Tara, your mother know you out this late? So it's changed a lot. And it's a good, bad change. It's a good change because there's jobs here, but with the jobs, it's a little discrimination, not as far as color, but like I said, if you're a felon or, you know, you got to have, you know, a certain walk or talk to get certain jobs around here now in the mainstream. But, you know, back when I was coming up, you know, nobody judged you. Whatever you did or whatever you were doing, okay, but it still took a village to raise a child. You can find a child mother that was on drugs and nobody treated that child different. If anything, they would pull that child in and make sure that child ate, was fed, was bathed, and was okay. You know, now it's different. You don't get that same wholesome feeling that no matter what went on when I was coming up, the village was there. You know what I mean? You don't get that same wholesome feeling anymore. You know, right now, children are growing up here and they're not all right with going to a neighbor and saying, my mom or my dad's not home, I haven't eaten. You know, things have changed a lot and it's not good. You know what I mean? It's not good because right now in our community, though we have these stores and things, we have a community with a lot of negative things going on. And if you're not from Bliss Towers, Scala Court, the Terraces, Columbia Street, and from 3rd Street down, if you actually from 5th Street now, because 5th Street down has gotten worse. If you're not from down this way, you really don't see everything that goes on. You know, you stay on Warren Street, that's all you see is Warren Street. You see the nice shops, the places to eat. But until you go past that, go down Warren Street and past Columbia Street and go to Bliss Towers, you'll see the minorities and, you know, the things that are lacking in the community as far as the children. And, you know, what's lacking makes children turn to the streets. You know, then you have children out late at night. You might have them selling drugs. You might have them robbing and stealing. You might have them doing a lot of things because, for one, there's nothing for them to do. For two, they might not have nobody to help them with the needs they have, school clothes or just a meal. So you have children doing a lot of things to survive. That's their survival skills. That's their, you know, how they have learned to survive. You know, I say that to say that, you know, those that own businesses here, take a step down by Bliss Towers. Walk around in that community. You know, see how the kids, you know, really don't have, you know, they have a little playground, but it's really not a playground. See how they're living now. You know what I mean? And then maybe they'll understand why the community at that end is what it is. It's not because that's what it's wanted to be. It's because we don't have these good people that are on Warren Street now with these, you know, you buy houses and things like that. You have, your rent is $1,200 for a one bedroom. Nobody around here can afford that rent. You know what I mean? And if you're a struggling single mom like I've been, you can't afford that rent. You know, before I went to prison, I worked for, it's not that, yeah, I made a poor choice, but I worked for Special Needs Center for Disabled, Mercer Farm Center Services for Youth. I mean, I've had good jobs, but as a single parent and a single mother, there's no way you can afford that rent. I said, I have 6 children. Okay, so $1,200 for a one bedroom. Can you imagine a rent for a 3, 4, 5 bedroom? You know, my children are older now. I only have a 16 and my 9-year-old, my babies. But, you know, I really think they need to take a look at, you know, the expense as far as housing, you know, the different things that could be done as far as the community. And not only that, have a job fair. You know, you say you have all these jobs on Warren Street and you're looking for people. We don't know that. You know what I mean? We don't know, because we see the Warren Street. We see, we're going to say how they would say it in the hood. We see bougie. You know what I mean? We see people that they're from Manhattan. They don't want to be bothered with minorities. That's what we see. And if you're saying that you have these jobs available, just places like Promise where we're at right now, you have the high-rise community room where you can have a job fair and offer this community, the people that need jobs, that are looking for jobs, so they can support their family and get out of poverty. So, you know.
Thinking a lot about what she said, because there's so many good points. I'm curious about some of the things you're talking about, how the village should take care of children. And I wonder if you have any experiences that you'd like to share that when you were a child in Hudson, you felt cared for by this village.
I did. I have people like Toni Kross, Adele, let's see, who else? God rest her soul, Aunt Leslie Kross. Let's see, just to go back. We have Vernon Kross, the uncle. Who else, like, in my community? I had a lot, and I had Edwina was my mother's best friend, which is Tamara Jones works for Promise Neighborhood. That was her mother. Her and my mom were best friends. I had her, and I had many experiences where, you know, I was at the age of 15 and I just thought I was grown. You know, I thought it was all right to hang out, and, you know, and I would get checked many a times. Tara, you know, you're not supposed to be out. And, you know, I never talked back, you know, because I knew I was wrong. So when they to pull me aside and pull my coattail, Tara, it's time to go and it's late. That's what I would do. You know, I always felt love in my community. I never felt like I couldn't go to a Toni Kross or Adele or Leslie Kross or their mother, as far as if my mom was at work or I was locked out and, you know, my mom wasn't there. I never felt as though I couldn't knock on their door and say, my mom's not there. I never felt like I couldn't do that, because I can always knock on that door and sit there like I was one of their children. You know, so I always had that. I can speak as a person from this community that I always had that love for my community as far as those older adults. And I still have that love. I can still knock on Aunt Toni's door. I don't call her Toni. I call her Aunt Toni. Aunt Leslie is deceased, so I can't knock on her door. Adele, I can knock on her door and say, Adele, listen, you know, I need a hand. I need a hug. You know what I mean? I need somebody to talk to. I can still do that at the age of 43, so I'm blessed. You know what I mean? I've been through whatever I've been through, but I can still say I'm blessed. I'm still standing strong, and I still have the love for my community, so I'm blessed. You know what I mean? So that's how I feel about the village that, you know, helped to raise me. You know what I mean? That never judged me, because I used to be something else back in my days. You know what I mean? I was something else. Tara, no, you, yes, it was me, you know, but I never got a back turned on me. You know what I mean? I still had the village, and they still was there for me. Even through, you know, my struggles as far as incarceration, I came home. I was never judged, you know. I still had, you know, a lot of people from the community ask my mom how I was doing, ask my children how I was doing, you know. I came home, and like I said, Joni has always been there. Phone call. I could call Joni Collette. I called Joni. My daughter stayed with Joni. My daughter Nani stayed with Joni. But Joni has always been like an angel. You know what I mean? Tamara Jones has always been an angel. You know, since I've come home, like, I don't get the funny looks. I don't get judged. You know what I mean? You know, I can call them. I can call the people I named and say, you know, I'm having a bad day. You know what I mean? Can we talk? You know what I mean? You know, and even since I came home, a lot of people that I might have had issues with, or I might have had an issue with their sister or their cousin. You know, I could still, Carmella McSweeney, I mean, me and her about 3 weeks ago went and had lunch at Applebee's, you know, and me and her family don't have a good history, but, you know, when people see you change for the better, that's when they even more want to be, you know, sit down and have a talk with you and see, you know, what can they do, you know, to help your situation. And I'm not talking about materialistically. I'm talking about a conversation, a quote on my phone in the morning, a spiritual quote, you know, a call to say how you're doing. These are the things, not the materialistic things. What means more to me now is that to be able to call a person up and be able to express what I'm feeling, or if I'm going through something bad today, be able to express that feeling and know that no matter what I say to them, it's between us two. You know that, you know, no matter what goes on, you know, even if we stop speaking, even if something goes wrong, I don't have to worry about our conversation being repeated. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I'm grateful, you know, to my community for all that they're, you know, helping me do right now as far as, you know, housing, as far as finding a job. Even, you know, they're helping me as far as my parole stipulations and issues that I'm going through with parole. You know, they're helping to, you know, show parole and let parole know this is what Tara Cobbins is doing in our community now. This is all what positive she's doing. So this is why we're calling you, you know, pertaining to Tara, because this is what, you know, we want you to be on board for. You know, we want to sit down and have a meeting with you as far as Tara, as far as, you know, what her needs are to be productive and successful in society and in this community. So, you know, like I said, I'm very grateful. I'm grateful. I couldn't ask to come home to, you know, my community. I couldn't ask for more support than I'm already getting.
What are some of the positive things that people working with you right now are sharing with your parole officers or anyone kind of in the system?
They're sharing. I recently did barbershop talk. That's what Cedric Fulton said. I had an issue with parole a couple weeks ago. And Cedric, actually, I called him very upset. And Cedric Fulton called my parole officer to tell him, like, listen, you know, you're supposed to be all for when a person is coming home and really trying to make change for the better. So he basically let my parole officer know, you know, she's working with SBK. She's working with Promise Neighborhood. She's, you know, this is what she's doing. She's, you know, networking with different people. These are the different people she's working with to try to better herself. You know, this is what we're working with her with as far as her housing. Her, you know, as far as getting employment, you know, if she wants to go back to college, these are the things that will help Ms. Collins do. And just basically letting him know that I'm on a positive path, you know, as far as what am I doing positive in this community. And I can say that, you know, anything positive going through Promise, going through, you know, any type of organization that deals with SBK or Promise Neighborhood, any meeting, anything that's going on positive, I'm all for it. If there's a meeting coming up, I'm there. You know what I mean? I even spoke with Tiffany Garaga. I hope I'm saying her name right. Tiff, don't get mad at me if I said it wrong. But Tiff is all the women. I'm in this community. And I can say that me and her haven't always seen eye to eye. But when I came to Barbershop Talk, you know, me and her spoke. We left Promise Neighborhood together speaking about, you know, different things about the community. And we exchanged numbers. And so even with her, the next thing that happens at City Hall, she's going to give me a call. So these are the things that I'm trying to, that's my positive energy. You know what I mean? This is how, you know what I mean? This is the positive energy I'm feeding off for all the positive things I'm doing to help me stay focused, to help me stay positive. I might be having a bad day, but I look at positive things I'm doing and I feel better about whatever's going on. You know what I mean? Aside of looking at my children, being grateful that I'm home, looking at my grandbabies, being grateful, you know, that I'm home, you know, so I can look, you know, and I look in the sky and I'm grateful because during my incarceration, I lost 2 grandbabies. So I do a lot of the things I do too. And I look up and I'm like, I know they're watching over me. So, you know, that's why I said, like, I've been through a lot And no matter what I've been through, like, I love my village here. You know what I mean? Because they've been there. You know, even if it was just a card while I was incarcerated, when I was going through what I was going through. You know, even if it was to stop by my mom's house, you know, and say, you know, tell Tara, you know, we was wondering how she was doing. Tell her we said hi. So, you know, aside of that, back to what you were saying, you know, so Cedric Fulton, you know, made that call. Joni makes that call to let parole know what I'm doing. Ruth, Mary Walker, Reentry Program, Lori and Carolyn. These are all the people that, you know, I've been working with since my incarceration up until I've come home. I still keep in communication with them. So these are all the people that are Team Tara. That's what I call them. I call them Team Tara, you know, because if something's not going right with parole, or, you know, he's second-guessing me, I call up Team Tara, and Team Tara is there. So I'm grateful for all those people. I definitely am.
I like that, Team Tara.
I like it, too. You know, it's a positive thing. It's a positive thing. Absolutely. And I love it, and I'm grateful. Mm-hmm. So.
What, if you're comfortable sharing, what was an experience that you maybe had when you were incarcerated that you think about a lot when you're here within your village, even surrounded by Team Tara?
You know, I can actually say that, you know, in life is what you make it. You know, when I went to prison, I was a totally different person than I am now. I was a very angry person. And I had to do a lot of soul searching to find Tara. You know, when I looked in the mirror before my incarceration, when I first got incarcerated, I didn't like the person that I was looking at. You know what I mean? So, you know, I had a lot of demons I had to deal with. So I had to swim below the surface and deal with that. You know, so while I was incarcerated, I experienced a lot of love, you know, because of my attitude change. You know what I mean? And when I say life is what you make it, prison is what you make it also. You know, I had one bad experience, but it made me stronger. I had an experience where I was incarcerated. That happened in 2013. I had allowed myself to be befriended by a young lady that had nobody. And to me, she was one of my children's ages. So I opened up my arms as far as like a mother figure to her. But at the end, it almost cost me my eyesight. It was a he say, she say situation. Move forward, and I got hit. She hit me with a lock and a sock in my eye. I received 3 orbital fractures in my left eye. I was rushed out, and they thought it was gonna have to put me in emergency surgery. They didn't think that the way I looked when it happened, you know, when she came in my queue, we were fighting at the time. I thought she hit me with her hand, but it felt so hard, and I'm like, it couldn't be. But moral of the story, she hit me with a lock, and I had to be rushed out. And for a while, my left eye, my eyesight was very blurry. I had to wear glasses that I still have up to this day. They're dark glasses. They're adjust to the light. Mm. I had to wear those glasses for a while. My vision was blurry for a while. My left eye didn't get good. It took like a good 2 months, and even still, like I had an involuntary involuntary motion in my eye, like the light would bother my eye. Mm-hmm. So I had involuntary like jump. It just like my eye was just, it was terrible for a while. So, you know, that experience made me, I still was the same kind-hearted person I was, but it made me shut my doors a lot to people I would see that had less than me. But at the same time, it wasn't that I didn't want to be there for them, but that experience with that young lady really made me close my door a lot. You know what I mean? It didn't make me stop being a loving Tara that I was, but it made me real cautious about who I really opened my arms to. And and stop that. You know what I mean? So that experience was it was a lesson learned. You know what I mean? It was a lesson learned. But I would still sit here and tell you that anything and everything I did for that young lady, I still would never take it back. You know what I mean? And after that, I forgave her. You know, it took some time. And she apologized to me at that time. I didn't accept the apology. But I forgave her before I left out the gates. You know what I mean? And the forgiveness wasn't for her. It was for me. You know what I mean? So I forgave her. But like I said, the forgiveness was for me. So that experience was a harsh experience, you know. And besides that experience, like, I was good there. You know, I made the best of everything, you know. Marymount College had professors that came there to Bedford. So I was going to college. So, you know, I got a lot out of that. I got some credits out of college, you know. I learned different things I never thought I would, like, buff stripping and waxing floors. I can do things like that. Like, I learned a lot of things, like mowing lawn. I would never pick up a lawnmower before. But, you know, these are the things I experienced by being incarcerated, which was a good experience, you know. In the last 2.5 years of my incarceration, I worked in RCOD, which is reception. So that means that any female that came through, I would see, you know, I did housekeeping for them and a lot of different things, you know. And they made life a lot easier for me because, like I said, in life, everything is what you made it. Though I was an inmate, in order to give respect, you have to give it. And even when I left, I had a lot of love. And, you know, like I said, during my incarceration, I lost 2 granddaughters in 2014. I buried my grandbaby, Anaya. Actually, right now, Promise Neighborhood has a bench in front of here that says Anaya Teresa Welch. That was my granddaughter. We buried her in 2014, not even 6 months later. In May, we buried my other grandbaby from SIDS. So during my incarceration, that right there, that's where I really hit rock bottom. Anaya passed away. That definitely was rock bottom. But like the back-to-back really, it played a lot. You know, at that time, you know, Anaya had been through a lot. She the whole community knows who Anaya is. She suffered from grandma's seizures, and it got so bad, you know. When I got incarcerated, she was already in the hospital. We didn't think that my daughter, Teresia, that was her daughter. We thought she was going to be able to weather all the storms, but, you know, she was God's child first. So, you know, though it was a tough loss, you know, it took me a while to, should I see it? How can I say it? It took me a while to kind of understand, you know, she was God's child first and she's no longer suffering. You know, so that right there out of my whole incarceration, that was my worst time when I lost Anaya and Destiny, that like I hit rock bottom. That was one of the points where I gave up for a little while. Things became really hard. I stopped eating. I just stopped caring, you know, but, through that, it helped me to become a better woman, a better mother, a better grandmother. Because like I said, I have other grandchildren now. Anaya has a little sister named Blessing. So that right there, it rocked me to the core. And I will always, 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 always have a piece of me missing. But at the same time, it helped me become a lot wiser. It helped me become much stronger mentally, not physically. So much, but mentally it helped me, and emotionally. If I wish I could bring them back, but like I said, that right there, you know, and that made my incarceration after I got over the hump, so to speak, it made me strive harder to become a better person. It made me want to give college my all when I went to college. It made me, though I was incarcerated, it made me, every step I made, it made me want to make sure I was giving it my all. It made me, you know what I mean, really sit back and do some extra soul searching, you know what I mean? So, you know, that those experiences was a lot for me, but, you know, I'm all right with it. You know what I mean? I can actually say, you know, as I sit here, that I'm all right, you know, I'm all right. You know, I know Anaya and Destiny are watching over me. You know, I'm all right with the situation that happened with the girl that was incarcerated, because like I said, the forgiveness was for me. And I moved on after I left out the gates. But, you know, those are, you know, all the experience I had while I was incarcerated. And though some people might not understand what I'm going to say, but my incarceration made me a better person. Made me a better woman, made me a better mother, made me a better grandmother. So I wouldn't take it back. The only thing that really hurt was being away from my children, my grandchildren, but that experience truly helped me to do some definite soul searching. And I needed that, you know what I mean? So though I was away from my children and it hurt my children and my grandchildren and my parents a lot, that experience is something I needed, because the way my life was going, I might have been dead. Mm. And that's all actual honesty. I might have ended up dead, you know, and that's why I said my community never judged me, but the life I was living, I might have ended up dead or doing a life sentence. Mm. So, you know, I'm all right with it. You know what I mean? I'm a lot of people might not understand, but I thank God for that experience.
What was an influence that enabled you to take these less than happy experiences that you faced while you were incarcerated and find that, be able to get out of bed, be able to turn around? What influenced that change?
I had to... Like I said, in soul searching, you deal with your ugly, your good, your bad, everything. And I've never been a quitter. And what made me really, really get out my hump and help me to really strive even harder was my children and my grandchildren that passed away. It was like, now, you know, everything grandma does, she's gonna do, because she knows that you're watching over her and she knows that you want her to do better and you want her to be a better person. You know what I mean? So when I wanted to give up, and when I did give up, you know, as time went by, looking at their pictures and just, you know, seeing, and I had encouragement when I was incarcerated. I had a friend named Dean through thick and thin. She was definitely there for me. I had officers, Miss Green, Miss Marcel, Miss Charles, Mr. Copeland, Miss Jeffrey Williams. You know, that's why I say in life everything's what you make it. Though I was an inmate, 12G0520, I still was human to them. And they encouraged me. When I was laying in the bed for days, not wanting to do anything but shower, I wouldn't eat, they would come by, sit, talk with me, you know, give me spiritual things to read and things of that nature. So that helped me a lot also. So though I was there away from my family, my loved ones, I still had people that saw the good in me. You know, had love for me and really cared about my well-being. And I can't forget Miss Gonzalez. She was who I worked for the last, 3 years of my incarceration. Miss Gonzalez was there for me, you know. I can actually say that, you know, she shed a tear with me when, you know, my grandkids passed. You know, Miss Green, Miss Marcel, these are the people I worked with all those years that, you know, told me, Terry, you can't give up. You know what I mean? You got to think about, you know, your other kids that are home. You got to think about your, you know, your other grandkids. You got to think about your parents. You can't give up. You know what I mean? You're going to go home soon, and you can't do it doing this. You're not eating. You're not. So those are the people that really helped me to get up and look in the mirror and say, Tara, you got this. It's going to be all right. You know, and prayer definitely changes things, you know. I had a lot of sisters that, and when I say sisters, I don't mean all black. When I say sisters, I mean my sisters, black, white, pink, green, yellow. I mean that invited me to church. I went to church with them, sat with me in church, cried with me in church. So, you know, all those things made things a lot better. They did.
So.
Is there... I'm just moved by the how wonderful people can really be sometimes.
And that's a fact.
You know?
That's a fact.
It just... Yeah. Sometimes people are great.
Yeah, sometimes, you know, and sometimes they're not. But I can actually say, like, I've been surrounded with a lot of good people. You know, even when I was terrible Tara, I still was surrounded with people that loved me, that never judged me, and always encouraged me to do better. And, you know, and that was a good thing, you know. And everybody has been through a lot, you know. But, and when I say it take a village to raise a child, I mean, I had my first child when I was 16. You know, when he was very sick. Jamel, everybody knows Jamel. They called him Little Man. My son had gastrointestinal problems. I'm 16. What do I know about gastrointestinal problems? You know, the community was there for me and my mother. My son has had a needle in his head, his arm, his legs, everywhere. You know, when my son was one, he looked maybe like 6 months, if that. You know, so when I say that... my community has been there for me. Tony was there through that. Leslie was there through that. Like my mom and me received, my family received a lot of support because they said my son would make it. And he is now 27 years later. You know what I mean? My little man, he's still a little man, but that's my little man. And you know, he has a deep voice now, but you know, when I say it takes a village, my village was there for me. You know what I mean? When my son year-round was in a hospital from Albany Med to Clement Presbyterian Hospital in New York. My community was there for me. My village was there for me, you know, to encourage, knock on the door and see if everything was all right, you know, things of that nature, you know. And I'm grateful for that, you know. Years later, I never forget those things. I never forget the cards. I never forget, you know, the stop at the hospital. I never forget any of those things, you know, no matter how old I get, how far in life I get, I will never, ever, ever, ever forget those words, those kind words, those words of encouragement, those prayers that were prayed for my son, you know, for me and my daughter, you know, when we were going through what we were going through, because when I was incarcerated, so wasn't my daughter. You know, our case was the same case. And that was a lot. And, you know, Anaya mother, that was my daughter, Teresa. She was incarcerated also. So when we lost Anaya, she was in Albion. You know, they had to bring us back to Hudson, you know, and that was her first child, you know, and we both received a sentence of 5 years. So she never been in trouble. You know, the community knows about the situation, but my daughter had never been in trouble, graduated honors, a smart young lady. And she was taken away from her daughter when her daughter was so sick. Still to this day, I can never stop being so grateful for all the love my daughter received during her incarceration. When Anaya passed away, even before Anaya passed away, you know, the love that was shown to Anaya, you know, her friends went to visit Anaya when she couldn't. My mom was the grandmother, the mother, the everything to Anaya. And that's why I say that, like, I love my village, you know, my community, like, they was there for my daughter. You know, they was there for me, you know, the letters, the love, the everything, you know, though it was a sad experience that we went through, we had so much love. And till this day, my daughter has so much, so much love, you know. And like I said, like, I, you know, with my two children, Jamel and Teresia, you know, Jamel was so sick. 27 years later, he's here. They said he wouldn't make it. You know what I mean? Teresia lost her world. You know, it rocked her, and she was in Albion the same way, wanting to give up. But my baby, till this day, she's staying strong. We have a blessing, her other daughter. But, we'll never forget about Anaya. Anything Teresia does, includes my daughter Anaya and Blessing. My daughter has been an excellent mom, though, you know, her circumstances, she was incarcerated prior to that. My daughter was an excellent mom. She's an excellent mom now. And I'm so proud of my daughter, Teresia, that she still stands tall and the strength that she has. I mean, if I had to take a walk in her shoes, I don't believe I ever could. You know what I mean? And, you know, and it's you know, good. I can sit back now and look at all six of my children, you know, though, you know, my one son has his flaws, Daquan. The community knows Daquan. He has his flaws, but my thing is this. No one ever gave up on me. You know what I mean? And then I have a daughter named Jasmine. She has weathered all storms, our incarceration, you know, because though I was gone, she lost a sister too. You know, my daughter Nandi, she lost a sister. You know what I mean? She lost a niece, two nieces. So, you know, my son Daquan, you know what I mean? He lost two nieces. He lost a mother and a sister. You know what I mean? With us being incarcerated. You know, I have a son named Kareem. Kareem is 9 now. You know, and when I left, he was only 3. So, you know, imagine coming home and, you know, yes, he knows who I am, but we can't get that time back. So I moved forward, you know, and I'm not going to lie, for a while I was incarcerated, while I was soul searching, I was so mad at myself because I was away from my kids, you know, and I forgave myself. Even when my kids forgave me, I didn't forgive myself at that time. It took me a while. I got incarcerated in 2011, and my forgiveness for myself really didn't happen until like 2012, the end. My kids have forgave me, Jazz. No, my kids have forgave me, but I wasn't there yet with myself. But once I started really, truly loving me, Tara, the person I looked in the mirror and saw, then I could forgive myself and move on from there and see that, you know, my kids aren't just saying they forgive me because I'm their mother, but they truly forgive me because they seen, though I was incarcerated, they seen that I was, the good I was doing for myself to shape myself up and get myself together. So, yeah.
What's your youngest son's name again, who's 9?
Kareem. He's my sunshine. And you know, everybody else is grown. I have Kareem, that's 9. Nandi, 16. They're both a part of Promise. My next is Daquan. He's 21. Then I have Jasmine. She's 23. And then Teresia. Teresia's 25. Then I have Jamel. Jamel's 27. Mm-hmm. You know, so I love my babies. They are all blessings. I'm very proud of them. No matter what obstacles that we've been through, no matter what storms that come our way, we weather all of them, and we stand strong together. You know, all families have their ups and downs, but no matter what, we're there for each other. You know, and the matriarch of the family is my mom, Evelyn. You know, and I'm very grateful. You know, we don't see eye to eye all the time, but I'm very grateful to my mom because when I couldn't be a grandmother to Anaya and Destiny, she was there. When I couldn't be a grandmother to Honesty, which is Daquan's daughter, she was there. You know, when I couldn't be a mother to my children because of my incarceration, I was a mother from there, but that was a distance. My mother was the mother, the grandmother, you know, the great grandmother. So I'm very grateful to my mother. I am, hands down. I got a good mom. I do. Mm-hmm. I have a great mom.
What's a family tradition that you guys all do together?
Well, we used to, and I miss it. We used to every Friday. I had an aunt named Barbara Coleman. She passed away in 2007, and like every Friday, she lived in Bliss Towers. Every Friday was fried chicken, you know, and I miss that. I miss that a lot. Being I've been incarcerated so long, you know what I mean? I've done 5 years and 3 months. Things have changed a lot as far as my family. Like the immediate would be my mom and my children, you know. They that close is there and has been there because of me and Teresia being gone. You know, so anything my mom did, it was really as far as with my children. You know what I mean? So it was kind of like she closed kind of, in a sense, close the rest of the family off. In a sense, you know, on holidays she would do the cookouts and stuff and cooking things like that. But her, it was, she really did a close-knit thing because of me being away and her wanting to make sure that my kids were, you know, okay, making sure that she became overprotective. Mm-hmm. You know, since I've been home, we've had a few cookouts and things of that nature. Yet, I'm going to say this, and I'm saying it in a good way. Sometimes even when you're out of sight, sometimes you become out of mind to people. And though not with all my family members, I became that. So though I'm home and I'm so grateful being home, and I forgive all of them, and they know who I speak about, but I still love them. I've chose to, since I've been home, my real immediate focus is on me, my children, my grandchildren, and my parents. So, you know, I do see my family, like I said, in the holidays since I've been home, like Mother's Day and things of that nature. Mother's Day was good, but Mother's Day was more so just for me, my children, and my mother. You know what I mean? We were all supposed to go out, but I hadn't been home in 5 years of a Mother's Day. You know what I mean? So I cooked, opposed to us going out. You know what I mean? And it felt good to have all my children in the same household. And, you know, my daughter Jazz on Facebook, like, Mama Love still got it. So, you know, things like that as far as cooking. So, you know, though I love, you know, family functions and things like that, right now I'm more so into just me, my children, my grandchildren, and my, you know, my family. You know, if we cook out, we cook out. My family cooks out. They're actually cooking out today. I'm going to stop by, but I'm just like, in a sense, some people say, I don't know, I'm bored to myself now. You know, I've gotten older. It's all right to be around your family and, you know, branch out, but I just really, I'm at the point where I just love being around my children, my grandchildren, and my parents, and I like my me time, and that's where I'm at in life. Mm-hmm. You know, so, you know, and, you know, doing, you know, productive things in society and in my community, and that's just where I'm at. It doesn't mean I don't love the rest of my family, it's just that that's where I'm at.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned how you're spending your time doing productive things again, and I'm thinking back to when I asked you, what does that mean? You mentioned an organization called SBK, and I didn't ask you what that was.
Yeah, SBK. SBK is something Cedric Fulton is a part of. They basically, like Barbershop Talk, those different organizations are for this community. They're here to help the children. They're here. If there's something going on, say, my son Daquan, he's currently incarcerated. They're here to go to court with you, with your children. They're here to go with your children to court. They're here to advocate for your children, what's in their best interests. They're here to advocate for the community, what's in the community's best interest. What is in the best interest of our children to help our children to become successful in society, you know, along with going to college, different things like that. So that's what SBK and Promise are all about. And that's what Positive I Say That I'm into as far as the community and productive things. That is what productive I am to as far as in this community. And also productive doesn't always have to mean in your, just in your community. Doing productive things with my children. Like last week, me, Kareen, 90, and my nephew Hashim is here. We went swimming. You know what I mean? You can be productive with your children. You can do different things with your children. You can read a book with your children. You can just take a walk in the park with your children. That's being productive. You're talking about positive things. So it doesn't have to be just per se doing things in my community. Mm-hmm. Being productive means being with my children, staying positive with my children, spending time with my children also, my grandchildren. You know what I mean? Last week, my grandson, his mother had a orientation. You know, I spent time with my grandson. He's only 4 months. You know, she had him while I was incarcerated. So that was only my second time seeing him. So that was very productive for me that, you know, him doing the spit bubbles and playing with him and things of that nature. You know, that meant a lot to me. That quality time for him to smile and things of that nature. So when I say productive, it doesn't just mean in society. It means as far as my children also. So, yes.
What role do you think some of the business owners on Warren Street and those businesses, what role do you think they can play in the community?
I believe that they can play a big part in our community. I believe that they have the resources, the extra financial resources to build on to playgrounds for the children. They have extra resources as far as fundraisers for children, as far as getting them into colleges. I feel as though they can play a big part as far as jobs, as I was saying to you, as far as a job fair. You know, you have jobs available in your stores. Why not, you know, get in contact with SBK, Promise Neighborhood, Tiffany, or Quentin Cross, or, you know, Cedric Fulton, to have a job fair at Bliss Towers. You can open up doors for people my age, younger children, as far as jobs. And also, you know, people that own businesses, they own some of these houses around here. They own some of these property around here. You know, you're asking for so much for rent. And I mean, it's not like you need the money that you're charging. I mean, it's not that, you know, you're lacking in, you know, as far as financially, you know, what is it? You know, some of these businesses, for a fact, can build. You're buying property, you're fixing it up. You can build something and have, you know, help as far as subsidizing housing. You know what I mean? The rent doesn't have to be. So I understand you're trying to get back what you put in, but at the same time, you're a part of this community now. You should want, as far as, you should want, you know, you should want, let me say this right. You should want to help this community, being that this is a part of your community now. You should want for it to be less crimes in this community. I mean, because let's be honest, the crime rate is better in this community, but at the same time, let's be honest, you have a lot of overdoses going on in this community. There were just, if I'm not mistaken, about 5 overdoses last week. Now, with that being said, you can help this community. There are overdoses because there are drugs in this community. These people that are selling drugs, they are selling drugs. Why? Not because they want to, but because they don't have a means to provide a roof over their head, food in their stomach. If they have children for their children, they might have disabled parents. So you can give back to this community, and you can also stop a lot of the illegal activity if you would hand out some of those jobs. You know what I mean? Present something, trial basis. You know what I mean? You can give a trial basis for somebody that has a criminal history, as long as it's not for burglarizing and things of that nature. And even if so, what is the level of it? You know what I mean? What is this? What was the level of that burglary? I mean, was it just, I stole from, you know, you can steal from your parents, you can steal from somebody, and they'll steal. So I just believe that with all that being said, if they would just take the time out to really become the village, it would help. Mm-hmm. It definitely would help.
Can you describe an experience that you've had looking for a job in Hudson?
Wow. Okay, as I stated, I'm a Category 1 violent felon is what I'm called because of my crime. Category 1 violent felon disqualifies me from a lot of things. And when I say that, I'm saying to let you know that I can no longer work at Brookshire Farm Center of Service for the Youth. I can no longer work at a nursing home or a center for disabled. These are the things that I love doing. So because of my poor choices, I'm not blaming anybody else for my poor choices, I can't do the things I love. So now what I'm open to now is I can do an application But once they do a background check, it's like, that's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. You know, you're a violent felon. We're not going to accept you. You know, so that makes my life hard, along with being on parole, having stipulations. So right now, I don't have a license. Mm-hmm. And I can't get a license unless parole says so. And that makes things hard on me, too. I have a curfew. I have to be in by 8 o'clock. So that makes my life hard. Though they'll change the curfew if you find a job. My only issue is trying to find a job. You know, so, you know, I bump into a lot of, you know, because I'm a violent felon, you know what I mean? I don't get a second chance. You know what I mean? That's it, that's all. Once I say that, that's it, and that's all. Mm-hmm. But I'm not going to lie if you ask me about, am I a convicted felon? Yes, I am. You know, they have that thing where it's past 5 years, you don't have to admit. But, you know, if it's questioned about certain things, you have to be honest. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So, you know, it saddens me a lot because I want better and I want to do better. And a job will really help me do better. And it's not like I don't have the knowledge, wisdom, or understanding to have a good job. Yet, because I'm a felon, it makes it hard for me. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that it's rough. But, you know, I still manage to come out shining as far as smiling and staying content and just looking at, you know, positive things. And this too shall pass. The storm can't last for so much longer. And that's what I just hold on to.
What's some of the language that these companies or places that you're applying for, what's some of the language they use to tell you that they're not looking for someone anymore or to tell you about your background?
No, they'll just say we're not hiring at this time. You know, if we should, you know, need help, we'll give you a call or, you know, like the brush off or, you know, you call and say you did an application, what's the status on your application? We'll get back to you, and they never get back to you. Mm-hmm. Things of that nature. Hmm. Things of that nature.
So it's not an honest answer.
Yeah, it's definitely not an honest answer. It's not. You know, just tell me, listen, you're, you know, a felon. I don't want to. I'd rather them say that than string me along, in a sense. Just be honest with me so I know just not to bother you anymore. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I can become all right with that. You know, if I'm wasting my time here, and you're definitely not going to, just tell me that. You know what I mean? And, you know, all right.
Yeah.
You know, so.
I want to go back to, we were talking about housing in Hudson and how it can be difficult to find housing. I'm curious if you wouldn't mind talking to me a little bit about your home right now.
Yeah, I don't have a problem. Right now, I have families I can parole to. Parole deny my parole addresses. When you come home from incarceration, your parole address has to be approved by your parole officer. If your parole officer does not approve an address for you, they house you in a hotel. So I'm currently being housed in a hotel that's 45 minutes from here. So unless I have appointments and things of that nature that I have to do as far as parole, my mother picks me up. Therefore, I can spend time with my children. So, you know, everything isn't all peaches and cream for me right now, but I make the best of it. So being that, they would let me parole with my mom, my daughter, my aunt. I have several places I could be and be comfortable. I have to deal with a lot of shenanigans, you know. I have to, in order for me to get a hot meal, I have to come to my mom's. I can go to, you know, the corner stores, but it's not the same. I mean, in order for me to cook at this present time, I go to my mom's house and I'll take out some and make dinner for everybody. You know what I mean? Or if I want something hot for later on, like I'll cook me something and I'll put it in the containers and I'll take it back out with me and just heat it up later. So that is like what my housing is right now. And then like DSS helps me But I don't want to be on DSS. I want a job. I want a life. I don't want DSS paying my bills. I want to be able to take care of me. You know what I mean? And like I said, I have a good mom. I don't want for anything per se. Like, I never have to worry about where my next meal is coming from. I never have to worry about if my laundry is going to be washed. I never have to worry about if I have, like, you know, and I'm fortunate, though I'm in a hotel, there are other parolees at that hotel. They don't have what I have. They don't have a family that'll pick them up every day, bring them back. They don't have, they have to use whatever the hotel gives them. They have to use their towels. I have my own sheets, towels, pillows, pillowcases, my own cleaning supplies, my own everything, you name it. I have it. You know, and a lot of people don't have that, and I'm grateful for that. You know what I mean? I have the things that I would have in my own bedroom. The only thing that's not mine is their bed and their dresser, but everything else is mine. From the shower curtains to everything, everything in there belongs to me, and I'm grateful for that. I don't like being there, but I make the best of it. And a lot of people don't have that. You know what I mean? So I'm grateful that I have a loving family. I'm grateful that I have the materialistic things they are. I have the things and necessities I need, plus. You know, and some people can't say that. You know, some people that are living in their own apartments can't even say that. You know what I mean? So I'm grateful.
Yeah. What are some of the things that you love to cook? Like when you go home to your mom's?
Oh my goodness, my baked ziti, my lasagna, my spaghetti, my turkey chops. I mean, like, I'm just, I like and the cornbread and I'm a pasta person. I like chicken though. I like fried chicken a lot. Macaroni salad, macaroni and cheese. Like I love to cook. So, you know, I love cooking. So those are a lot of things. Like I cook, simply I make enough that way that, you know, I can take it with me. And then, like, the children I have. So, like, when I cook for me. But I cook, you know, because the kids always come by my mom's, my parents' house. So, it's always, like, a lot of people, we like leftovers. You know what I mean? So, it's always enough, you know, for my daughter Jazz to come by and grab something. Because sometimes she do doubles or, you know, and things of that nature. So, you know, that's what I like. I love cooking, and I missed it so much. Though I was incarcerated, we had, you know, stoves we could cook. I miss cooking for my family, sitting down at a table with my family, laughing, joking. I miss that. You know what I mean? So, yeah.
What was the thing that your family, as soon as you came home, said, make me this?
Well, I actually, like, my mom, like, they were really on, you know, relax, you just got home, we can eat out. And I'm like, I'm sick of, yeah, I'm tired of that. I don't want to eat out. And that's why on Mother's Day, I'm like, Mom, listen. You know, I called her up when we were supposed to go. I'm like, Mom, listen, we are not going out to eat. Listen, you come grab me. We're going to grab this, and I'm going to cook, and we're just going to, you know what I mean? This is what we're going to do. I said, you know, if you want, we'll buy a few cakes from the store. But, I mean, we're not, yeah, we're eating home at the table, just, you know. And it felt good to just, like, sit around and cook all that stuff, and just everybody, from the salads to the lasagna to the chicken to that. It just felt so good to, like, sit back when it's, like, it just felt good to, like, being a sub, though, you know, it's a little hot in the kitchen after you've been kissed. But I was all right with that because it just gave me such a good feeling to know that after all was said and done, me and my family was going to sit down and eat. And, you know, the day was going to go by where we were going to have a lot of laughs, you know, a little reminiscing and things like that. So, which was a good thing. And, you know, my grandbaby, you know, crawling all over the place and things of that nature. So, all those things, it was good. You know, that's, you know, yeah. Yeah, that's, yeah, it's a good thing. It's a blessing. I no matter what I've been through, I feel blessed and highly favored because I'm still here. I'm still here.
Mm-hmm. What's your dream job?
I can never get my dream job. But I'm striving for, I want to go back to college. My major prior to this was business, and I was taking psychology. So I truly want to get a degree in business. So I'm really thinking about some fall classes. So I do want to, you know, get, you know, a business. You know, I love me. While incarcerated, I took cosmetology. So I can do hair. And I would love to open up a business doing hair. You know what I mean? That would, you know, I would love to do that. That would be, you know, a good thing. You know what I mean? So that's something I'm striving for. But if I really, really, really could get back to, you know, like special needs or something like that, you know, that I love helping people. That has always been, I love helping people. But, you know, because of my poor choices, that's not going to happen. So, you know, I have to go past that. I can't stay stagnated on what if I coulda, shoulda, woulda, and maybe it woulda. It's just not going to happen.
What have been some of the jobs you've had throughout your life? You've mentioned a couple, but I'm curious.
Like I said, I work for Berkshire Farm Center and Service for Youth. I work for Julie Blair Nursing Home, which is in Albany. I was an activity aide. I worked at Walmart. I've worked at Special Needs in Albany. I've worked through Anytime, my PCAHHA. Let's see, what else have I done? The list goes on. I've worked at Cumberland Farms before. But my major jobs, like I said, was Berkshire Farm Center of Service for Youth, you know, Center for Disabled, things of that nature. Those are, you know, the things I loved, you know, so.
Are they, not being from this area, did you have to travel far to get to those places?
Yes. When I worked at Berkshire Farm Center of Service for Youth, I lived in Albany. So that's a travel from Albany to Canaan. But you know, the good thing about that is once I started working there, I knew quite a few people. You know, the cancers, I knew quite a few of the gentlemen that lived in Albany. So at first I was taking a cab back and forth. It was $65 back and forth. I love my job and I love working with the young gentlemen. So for the first month between cabs and Lewan Cancer, Mickey Cancer, you know, riding back and forth with them, I was able to purchase a Jeep. So then I was able to get back and forth. But, you know, the traveling, it was a lot. It was a lot. Julie Blair was like right across the bridge. So that wasn't a big deal. So, you know, and a lot of times when you get good jobs, it involves traveling. You know what I mean? So, I mean, but it was all right, you know what I mean? I love my job, so it was all right. The traveling didn't bother me because, you know, I was looking at the brighter picture. I was making the difference at the end of the day. You know what I mean? Berkshire Farm with the young boys and at the nursing home with the older people, you know? So it was worth it. Mm. It was worth it.
Would you mind telling me a little bit more about what Berkshire Farm does?
Berkshire Farm Center and Service for Youth. It's in Canaan. It's a boys group home. Okay. They have a day treatment program in which it's an all boys facility, which the boys can come for day treatment. They come to school, but they go home. And then they have where you live there. They hold young men up to the age of 21. They have counsel. They have different cottages. And basically what they do is they work with the young men on goals. They work with, you know, whatever their needs are to try to get them home sooner than later with their families. Some of the children had parents on drugs, so it made things a little harder. But, you know, they had the visiting for the kids on the weekends. They had a basketball team for the, you know, a lot of the boys play basketball. And if you play basketball, you can get whatever and do whatever. I mean, it was a good thing. You know, they played ball real good. They provided the suits, the sneakers, and different things for the children. Some of the children didn't have parents that provided for them. So, you know, they have monthly allowances and things of that nature. Once a month, we would take some of the kids. I took some of the boys. I used to take them to Cross Gates Mall or Pittsfield Mass, their mall. One of the kids, David Barnes, God rest his soul, he was one of my favorite kids. When he left in, I want to say 2002, he went home and committed suicide. He came from a dysfunctional family, good kid, smart. You will find a him sometimes, whereas he didn't get a lot of home visits like everybody else, you know, because the kids get home visits. But if the family don't want them home, they can't come home. So when holidays and stuff, they're the only ones on campus, certain kids. And, you know, they do things for the kids. We do things for the kids. But he was one of those kids that didn't have the love he deserved. And as a counselor, you can do different things. I used to, down the road from the group home, it was a Family Dollar, pizza place and things like that. Like, or before I went to work, like, I would buy him like different hygiene, like little different things that I would see that he needed. And you know, a lot of people did that for different children. You know, sometimes you don't mind going out your way because you see a good kid that's struggling, trying to, you know, be all they could be and, you know, try to get themselves together. And then you have a family that is not giving them all they deserve. So your heart goes out, you know what I mean? So Berkshire Farm does a lot for the kids. They do, you know, they have different picnics and things for the children. You know, like I said, they provide, you know, materialistic things for the kids once a month, the trips. You know, they pay for them to go home, you know what I mean, on holidays. You know, and it's a clean place. Different cottages, they provide them with a bed, a dresser, you know, and the kids can, you know, their family can, they buy their own clothes, you know, you can purchase your own clothes, you can bring things there. It has to be checked, but it can come in. The kids can also, they might have money in their accounts when they go out. They can take their, you know, you'll have their money, but, you know, they can buy themselves, like, if they want Chinese food. Like, we go out for a day trip, they're allowed to bring that food back with them, and they can warm it up. You know, they have a nice size TV room for the kids, pool tables for the kids. On grounds, they have in the back, a picnic area is real nice. What else do they have for the kids? They have the basketball courts for the kids. They have a church on ground for the kids. What am I missing? They just do, overall, they do a lot for the kids on campus. The day treatment program is good. It's just run different, but the day treatment kids interact with the kids that are on campus. You know, sometimes the kids that are in day treatment do end up living there, but a lot of them turn out great. Some of them go back. Some of them end up with a DIN number like I did, you know, but majority is when I was there, it was a good turnout, you know. But I see now a lot of people say negative things about Berkshire because a couple of times kids stole cars and things of that community out there. Mm-hmm. Say different things about the kids, but opposed to knocking them down, how about we build them up? You know what I mean? Okay, he stole a car. Why did he steal a car? What took place? You know, because there are things that everything isn't always peaches and cream in group homes. You know what I mean? Everything isn't what it seems to be. You know, you might see this happy kid, but on the inside, there might be something going on in there that we don't know about. So find out what's going on before you judge him. You know what I mean? So, yeah.
How did you get from Hudson to Albany, where you were living when you worked?
I moved. I moved in 1999, I moved up there. I've always been back and forth to Albany as far as shopping. That's the closest place where the mall is. And I have family in Albany. My children's father is from Albany. They have family there. So one day I just was like, you know, I need to move. I need something different. You know, so I ended up in Albany. And I ended up getting a job at Berkshire. And it was good. You know what I mean? So, you know, sometimes you relocate, but you don't really relocate too far. I love Hudson. You know, no matter where I go in life, I will never forget where I come from. I will never not come back to my community. I will never, you know, a lot of people get better and, you know, find better jobs and move away and never come back. You know, we understand because you want better, but never forget where you come from. Never forget your community, because you coming back to this community might make a difference. You might be able to come back and make a difference in our community. So, you know, hands down, I'm glad for anybody that has gotten out of this area and has done better. But don't forget where you come from. This community can always use you to come back for a reason. You know what I mean? So, yeah.